The case for argument this morning is Spring Creek Coal Company v. McLean. You may proceed. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, I'm William Mattingly, and I, too, will attempt to limit myself and save 2 or 3 minutes for rebuttal. The legal question to resolve for the parties in this case is whether the Department of Labor's interpretive regulation that regular exposure to coal mine dust is a reasonable interpretation of the statute that allows a claimant to use a powerful presumption that their disability is due to pneumoconiosis when work in non-underground coal mines is deemed substantially or is done in conditions substantially similar to underground mines. The rule of law that I ask in the briefs for the court to adopt does not differ from the position of this circuit in Antelope Coal versus Gooden, as my opponents have suggested, but rather it distinguishes Gooden with a series of facts that Gooden's panel never had to consider, specifically scientific data about the exposure to coal mine dust. Here, other evidence was presented, and the administrative law judge simply did not meaningfully consider it when you read his decision and stopped his analysis when he concluded that there was regular exposure to dust. Now, there's a couple problems with that analysis. First, it's based on the report of Dr. Gottschall. It's pretty good evidence because Dr. Gottschall actually interviewed the gentleman in this case, Mr. McLean, before he passed away. But when you actually look at the history she took, the dust exposure occurred in mines in Wyoming. There is no discussion about the dust exposure that occurred at the Spring Creek mine in that report. The comments about significant coal dust exposure are all tied to that first mine. And I guess at this point I ought to acknowledge there is a jurisdictional question here that was presented by the clerk because of a footnote in the Benefits Review Board's decision. The case law is pretty clear that the jurisdiction of this court derives from the Longshore Statute, which indicates that if the injury occurred in any of the states in the jurisdiction of a court, the circuit court has jurisdiction. My opponents seem to agree that jurisdiction is in this court, and quite frankly, I picked this jurisdiction because the more substantive coal dust exposure from this record occurred in this jurisdiction, and this court had recently struggled with this question in the Antelope Coal, so we had a place to jump off from.
So you're saying in these types of coal dust cases, the miner who's disabled has to parse out which mine he worked in, what kind of exposure and level of exposure he experienced in each mine, and then bring action against whatever company had the greater impact on his health?
No.
I'm glad that's your response.
No, it's not nearly that complicated. It's whoever is the last employer is deemed to be the responsible operator. And there's no question my client is the responsible operator in this case. The jurisdiction of the circuit court can vary based on where the exposure happened. And it's a cumulative exposure, so then that's why that makes sense.
Yes.
So the question here is whether substantially similar conditions is satisfied by the test the director has put forth that regular coal dust exposure satisfies it. And the question to resolve is this a reasonable interpretation? It is not. Let's go back to the first case that looked at this issue, which was the Seventh Circuit's case in Midland Coal. Although this statute was passed in 1972, because there was a more powerful 10-year presumption, this 15-year presumption really never got litigated. And it was only after years that there were a few cases that litigated it. Midland Coal from the Seventh Circuit's the first one. One of the things that I think the director has failed to acknowledge in Midland Coal is the court's statement on 511 that there is no plain meaning to the requirement of substantial similarity in the statute. So we're left to try to figure that out on our own.
Well, isn't there evidence in this record that the Department of Labor relied in part upon Midland Coal when it promulgated its regulation?
Oh, there's no question that they discussed Midland Coal in the regulation. But I don't think that they were legitimate in their discussion, because the same argument that was raised in Midland Coal, and they talk about this on page 512, that simply being exposed to regular dust is sufficient, was rejected by the Seventh Circuit in Midland Coal. The Seventh Circuit looked at what the ALJ did, and the ALJ there required the non-underground miner to show what underground conditions were. That's silly. We all agree that that legislative history establishes underground coal mines are dusty. What Midland Coal said is the ALJ has to look at each specific case and then weigh whether or not the facts show that there was some substantially similar exposure. And to get there, you have to look at the conditions.
So is this a fact case? Is this a fact case? What's our scope of review?
I think it's a question of what the law is first, so it's de novo, but then it's did the administrative law judge credibly apply the facts in this case? And there's no question the administrative law judge is the fact finder, and when you look at the facts here, he has not credibly applied the facts in this case. And let me go to the strongest point immediately that I have, and that is the industrial hygienist report. In the comments to the regulations that the Department of Labor had, they suggested employers could go back and use MSHA data. They could use scientific data. I guess I was somewhat of a mind reader. I had done that in this case. Years before that regulation explanation came out in 2015, I'd gotten an industrial hygienist to actually take a look at this question. And if you will look at the joint appendix and look at page 99, that chart, I think, shows in chart form as clearly as it can be to support his conclusion as to why the ambient dust conditions are not similar in non-underground mines when compared to underground mines.
What about substantially similar? I mean, we're really in a
moving target. It is a moving target. And I think that's why the parties are here today, to ask you to help us to solve this problem.
Well, surely this is not a case of first impression, the substantial similarity inquiry.
It is not a case of first impression to deal with this provision of the 15-year presumption.
Right.
This court did that in Antelope. I took a case to the Sixth Circuit, Central Ohio, that dealt with the same thing. The Sixth Circuit's looked at it in Brandywine. It is a case of first impression in that we have scientific evidence from an industrial hygienist that has looked at this specific question and said, no, the conditions are not substantially similar. And why is this report so powerful?
Right, but I want you to address that. But first, was there evidence contradicting that? And is there evidence contradicting that in the record?
Judge, I don't think so when you really look at the record, because what the ALJ did here, ALJ Cowell, is he said, I find the years of work at Spring Creek to be substantially similar to underground mining because the testimony was Mr. McLean would come home dirty. Coming home dirty from work isn't the same as being exposed to substantially similar conditions of coal mine dust in the ambient air as in an underground mine. He explained that the hardest part about his job was cleaning the dirt off the treads of the machinery he operated. When you look at Dr. Gottschall's medical report...
Well, wasn't there also testimony? I mean, I think you're narrowing what was before the ALJ. Wasn't there also testimony of just the amount of dust that was in the air and that there was always dust that would seep into the cab?
His son said that there was some dust that seeped into the cab, that his father was meticulous in wanting to keep it clean, and that there would be a light layer of dust over the instrument panel. The position here is not that there was no dust. The position is that the dust was not substantially similar conditions to an underground mine.
I have a difficult time following that, because are you saying not substantially similar volumetrically or not substantially similar qualitatively, or what are you hanging your hat on?
Both. The industrial hygienist reached both conclusions. And he used data points from this particular mine from which Mr. McLean had been exposed that is also in the record to show that the amount of dust that he was exposed to in volume and the quantity of dust was simply unlike.
Let me ask you about as you explain your argument, there seems to be an underlying premise that an industrial hygienist comparison of the air quality would necessarily trump this lay testimony. And the premise seems questionable to me because scientific data is not always reliable. For example, if an industrial hygienist, Dr. Gottschall, had taken 1,000 days and had said, I'm going to compare the ambient air quality between a subsurface mine and the air quality for a miner working on a surface on one day out of 1,000, and I'm going to extrapolate that. I'm going to assume that that is true for all days of the year and for all of the 1,000 days. Can't a fact finder, an ALJ, legitimately say, I think in this particular case, the scientific data is less reliable than the lay testimony that that Mr. McLean came home dirty all of the time and he smelled, and that this Dr. Gottschall's testimony under my hypothetical scenario was simply not as reliable as the lay testimony? Why isn't that a genuine meat of a classic factual issue?
It would be, but there's a problem in what ALJ Colwell did in analyzing the issue. He only looked at it, was there regular exposure? He didn't look at the quality or the quantity of the dust exposure. And here the data points all line up, as the industrial hygienist explains. The 2003 numbers, actually from Mr. McLean, are right on target with everything else that was seen through all the thousands of IMSHA data points in above-ground and underground mines showing that there was much less exposure. And the other problem with that analysis becomes the anecdotal testimony of the claimant always wins. The presumption then becomes...
Well, not necessarily, because an ALJ may say to the contrary. The ALJ may say, just as you... They may subscribe to your view in that this is just anecdotal testimony. The scientific data trumps the lay testimony.
It could, but the director's point in the comments was that testimony alone is not enough. We need to have regular exposure. Right. I see that I'm down to about 2 minutes. I'd like to say
we
that.
Have one question, if we could judge...
Go ahead.
Briscoe's permission, perhaps we'll give you 2 minutes nonetheless. With the presumption, 15-year presumption in effect, what is your burden in order to overcome that presumption?
If that 15-year presumption is invoked, my client's burden is just shown that in this case there is no pneumoconiosis. Everyone agrees there's no clinical pneumoconiosis. The question is there legal pneumoconiosis? Or alternatively show that the pulmonary disability was not caused by pneumoconiosis. Rule out pneumoconiosis being present.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Sean Bukowski, and I represent the Department of Labor's Office of Workers' Compensation Programs. Mr. Mattingly, in his opening presentation, suggested that the Department of Labor had overlooked the Seventh Circuit's Midlands coal case when it developed its regulation, but that's not true. The Midland coal observation is actually essential to the regulation. Here's what the Seventh Circuit said when it looked at the statute, which says, Every underground miner gets the 15-year presumption, and surface miners get it if they worked in conditions substantially similar to conditions in an underground mine. They said, quote, we can discern no plain meaning of the requirement of substantial similarity. Instead, immediately apparent is the fact that the Act does not specify whether a claimant must establish similarity to a particular underground mine, a hypothetical underground mine, the best, worst, or an average underground mine. Now, this is an ambiguous statute, and the Department of Labor has the authority to clarify ambiguous terms and statutes by regulation. And that's exactly what we did here. The regulation defines substantially similar to dust as regular exposure to coal mine dust. It is not, as the employer's opening brief seems to suggest several times, that there's this sort of shifting presumption idea that the claimant shows regular exposure, and then the employer can rebut that by showing that, yeah, but the quantity is different. You know, that's not the test. The test is regular exposure. And I think this court has already ruled, already affirmed this regulation, upheld this regulation in the Antelope Coal versus Gooden case.
In Antelope Coal, the question wasn't framed, was it, of whether or not there should be Chevron deference applied to the regulation. Would you agree with that?
I think Chevron was raised in the briefs, but I don't think, the court didn't address it specifically. But I don't think there's a doubt that Chevron is the standard that applies. This is a notice and comment regulation, and there's no dispute from the employer that the Department of Labor has authority to issue regulations defining ambiguous terms in the Black Lung Benefits Act.
We didn't appear to address the Chevron issue, but it did so implicitly, it seems to me, in applying it to the facts in Antelope.
I think that's fair. I didn't want to be overly aggressive in my reading. I feel like that the my reading of the opinion in Antelope was that they didn't think it was a particularly close question, so they didn't need to go and do a detailed analysis of the level
right,
of deference.
Right, maybe I'd have to check it again, but it seemed that it was repeated in Antelope, the citation to the regulation and reliance upon it.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps the word Chevron was not uttered.
Right.
And is that how you recall it?
Yes.
Chevron was not mentioned?
I don't think Chevron was explicitly mentioned. I could be wrong. But I don't think it was.
Explicitly.
But I think, it's clear it's a regulatory deference case. They did defer to the regulation. There was a challenge.
And how do you interpret the burdens under the... First of all, is the 15-year presumption invoked here?
Yes.
How do you interpret, then, the respondent's burden to overcome that presumption?
They need to show that the miner wasn't regularly exposed to coal mine dust for 15 years of his employment. And they can, as the preamble says, and as the employer pointed out in its opening presentation, employers can use technical data to do that. The problem is that the technical data they put in here, in addition to what the ALJ pointed out, that it only does specific days, but even if you take the employer's implicit argument that shows the level of exposure that existed all the time, it proves regular exposure. It doesn't show that he wasn't regularly exposed. It shows that he was regularly exposed to coal mine dust while he worked.
He's arguing is the level, he's getting into quantitative analysis of amount of dust. You're saying it's enough if it's some dust every day.
Right. There's no safe harbor just because it, didn't exceed the Mine Safety and Health Administration's maximum amounts. And the regulation doesn't incorporate a specific, a quantitative standard. The key is, are you regularly exposed to dust while you're working? If they could have shown evidence that, the cabs where Mr. McLean worked, the filtration system, contrary to the son's testimony, was adequate. We have, testing samples from inside the kind of cab he worked at, or even better, the particular cab he worked at, that shows no significant dust, that would be a kind of technical data that would be relevant. But the as the preamble points out, the coal mine operators can introduce technical data if the data shows that the particular miner was not regularly exposed to coal mine dust. And there's certainly no argument here that he was exposed to, you know, a de minimis amount or only opposed, you know, only exposed incidentally during his work. So I think that the regular exposure standard does apply, and it doesn't have a qualitative, or rather a quantitative element to it. And again, as you said in the Antelope Coal case, you know, you actually, the panel actually speculated that perhaps, you know, a generic substantial similarity test might be arbitrary. It might be too difficult to apply. But they said that's not a problem here because the revised regulation. And what the court said was, the clarified standard, regular dust exposure, provides sufficient guidance to measure similarity. I think that's a clear holding that the regulatory, regular exposure standard is sufficient and permissible, and that it governs the 15-year presumption for surface miners.
I thought that you were telling Judge Lucero that once you have the substantially similar presumption satisfied, then you move on to regular exposure. Now you're bringing you're mixing the burdens, it seems. You're mixing the chronological analysis.
I apologize, Your Honor. That's not the impression I meant to give. It's there's just one question, and that's, was the miner regularly exposed to dust for 15 years?
What happened to the substantially similar presumption? Isn't that a question before us?
Well, substantially, under the regulation, while you're regularly exposed to dust is substantially similar.
Okay,
to
so they are. It's one question.
There's one question. Are you regularly exposed to dust while you're working for 15 years?
Did I miss something in the briefs, or is there really a full briefing and discussion here of whether Chevron applies?
The government said in its brief that Chevron applies, and I don't think.
Has there been a joinder of issue on that point? Because I didn't see it. If there is.
I think it's at least implicit in the employer's brief that the regulation fails Chevron, I think, because they think it's contrary to the statute. But that's, you know, might be me reading more into it than is actually there. But I don't think they dispute that Chevron applies. I don't think they say the Department of Labor doesn't have authority to issue this kind of regulation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think how you're reading their position is how I read it as well. That the regulation is inconsistent with the statute. That's, I think, their argument. And he's nodding. That's good.
Who says that body language doesn't care?
I see that I've used up more than half of my time. So if there are no further questions about either the regulation or the evidence that the ALJ relied on to find that the 15-year presumption was invoked here, which I think is similar to the evidence that was ruled substantially similar, or as substantial evidence to affirm the awards in the Antelope Coal case and in the Sixth Circuit's Central Ohio Coal case and the Seventh Circuit's Consolidation Coal case, I will end my presentation by asking you to affirm the regulation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Jared Bramwell, and I've represented the late Mrs. McLean, who was the widow of Brad McLean, the miner, who we've been discussing today. The employer, in making the arguments, has relied primarily upon the reports that were submitted by A.J. Tomer and Mr. Van Orden. But I believe such reliance is misplaced and is not persuasive. And I also believe the employers unfairly or improperly characterized the ALJ's decision in this matter. There's a couple things that in this discussion that I believe are important to keep in mind. And I think that ALJ in this case recognized, and it's in his October 6, 2015 decision and order on page 5, he makes this notation. Comparability, talking about the comparison that needs to be made between surface mining and underground mining, comparability need not be established to actual work underground because the definition of an underground mine includes the associated land, buildings, and equipment. And that comes up quite regularly in these cases where you have individuals that had surface jobs at an underground mine, and those individuals are able to qualify any and all time that they have at the surface, even if it's 100% of the time is underground work. So why is that relevant or important in considering the Tomer and Van Orden reports? Well, I think it's significant for a few reasons. First and foremost, and it was noted by Mr. Bukowski earlier, but both reports demonstrate that Mr. McLean and surface miners are exposed to coal dust on a regular basis. There's not a single test in either of those reports that indicates that there wasn't a day where there was no dust exposure. Number two, the reports do not acknowledge, let alone distinguish or identify, the nature of the dust samples taken at the underground mines. What they do is they compile a whole bunch, they can cherry pick what tests, and then they say, hey, because the tests here at underground mines appear to be...
I don't think, in fairness, that there's been a challenge here as to the qualitative substantial similarity. I don't think that there is an argument here that the coal from the underground source is different in effect from the coal at the surface mine. I don't think that's their argument. Aren't they basically making a purely kind of volumetric quantitative approach?
That's my understanding as well. But I think it's relevant when you think about, okay, what constitutes underground coal mine work? And when we're left with the vast differences that exist in the type of jobs that exist at underground mines or comparing those to surface mines, that even the quantitative analysis that's being made in terms of how much an underground, your average underground miner may be exposed to versus what your average surface coal miner may be exposed to, doesn't take into account the variability that exists even in both of those mines. And so relying and saying, hey, look, if any employer is able to show and come with some industrial hygienist, or we've got a test from a mine at one point that seems to be less, that somehow this court should require or implement a different standard, I believe would be inappropriate and confusing.
Well, is the statute basically create a strict liability situation if you worked in the coal mining industry for 15 years and you've been exposed to dust? That's it?
Absolutely not. I think Judge Bacharach was accurate when what we have here is Judge Colwell could have evaluated the evidence and said, hey, you know what? Based upon these reports, I find that regular dust exposure has not been met. I find that these reports demonstrate that it wasn't substantially similar. Ultimately, that's not what the judge found, but that's what the judge was able to do in this situation because there is significant evidence. And Judge Colwell did not identify all the evidence, and I would refer the testimony that was given by Mr. McLean's son, Matt McLean, page 40 of the deposition transcript, he outlines 40 to 60 different occasions that he actually went out and either visited his father or picked up coal from the site. And on page 41, he says whether he was driving, and this is the 40 to 60 approximate situation, whether he was driving a haul truck and they were loading, you know, the coal or the overburden in the haul truck, it was always dusty there. There was always a haul truck or there was always a fair amount of dust around the drill while he was drilling holes. There was also dust when he was loading for his shots, whether it was just doing his normal job or filling in on top of it.
Thank you. Well, you're out of time. Our clock runs up, so it's...
Oh.
Yeah.
Apologize.
You're just on a roll there.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. We will read the record.
I think that I can be pretty precise. Take a look at my opening brief, page 26. Mr. Bukowski's argument has problems because the Department of Labor has defined regular dust exposure to be substantially similar conditions. But in the comments that I quoted, they say that if it was interpreted, a miner was exposed to any coal mine dust in non-underground mining would satisfy the invocation of this presumption would be insufficient. Specifically, it wouldn't satisfy...
Can you repeat that last sentence, please?
Sure. I'll read you both sentences. The Department agrees with those comments that noted the proposed rule could be interpreted as allowing substantial similarity finding when a miner was exposed to any coal mine dust in non-underground mining. This would not satisfy the statutory standard and was not the Department's intent.
Would you say then that in order to qualify for benefits under the Act, a miner always has to have worked underground and at the surface?
Absolutely not.
What is your point then?
I think that the point is the Department's suggestion regular exposure establishes a prima facie case is a good rule. That makes sense. But then the ALJ has to look at the other evidence to see if it overcomes a presumption of regular exposure. And that's what's not been done here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all for your arguments this morning. The case is submitted.